Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our guest U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. Thank you for joining us, Senator.
Good to be with you, Ian.
We know how Republicans took control of the U.S. Senate last November through elections. Senator Whitehouse's priorities this session include efforts that he describes as attempts to make the tax system more fair. Senator, can Democrats like you really be effective when Republicans hold control of the Senate?
Yeah, there are a lot of opportunities for us now. It's actually kind of interesting. The first is when you've got good bipartisan legislation, the Republicans in the minority didn't want anything to pass. But now that they're in the majority, they've changed their strategy and they want bills to pass so that they can show the country that they can govern. A lot of very bipartisan good stuff that was just sitting on the shelf when they were in the minority is now able to be passed. So that's all good. And the second thing is that there are going to be some things that they've said they're going to do or that the country really wants them to do, where we have the chance from the minority to give them a good push, and particularly some of the tax gimmicks that encourage offshoring of jobs, that let these billionaire hedge fund guys pay lower tax rates than brick masons and truck drivers in Rhode Island. That kind of stuff gets pretty hard to defend. From the minority, we can force those issues and make them have to take a position. And with any luck, we'll get some progress.
Scott, do you agree with Senator Whitehouse that the Republicans running the Senate now have more of an incentive to get things done since they're in control?
Well, that's the conventional wisdom, and that's the Democratic spin. Now, the problem is the House more than the Senate. You have Speaker Boehner, and he's got a lot of people to his right, some Tea Party people, and I think what they're engaged in is kind of a veto waltz with the president, and it doesn't seem like there is any urgency about getting things done on that side. If you look at immigration, if you look at the large issues, the economy, they're threatening again to shut down the government, the Homeland Security. So I'm not seeing this from the House. I think the Senate is partially right if you believe the national press and some of the things in the Senate, but I'm not seeing a unified Republican forces doing that.
Let's get Maureen in here. Maureen, as we said a bit earlier, Senator Whitehouse's priorities this session include attempts to, in his words, make the tax system more fair. We know how Republicans tend to favor tax relief for corporations and the well-to-do. How do you see that playing out this year?
I think both Scott and the Senator have a beat on this in the sense that I don't see this coming from the House. As a matter of fact, I don't even understand their strategy. I mean, we're talking about elections, you know, talking about presidential elections.
And I'm not sure that they could be even said to have a strategy at this point. They're kind of winging it day to day. It's pretty wild over there.
Seems pretty obvious. And I do agree that there are some things that, you know, you might be able to move along because in the Senate, there's these bipartisan ideas about taxes, about corporations and so forth and so on. But so far, we haven't seen much.
We're going to go to some questions for Senator Whitehouse. We hear a lot about the emerging threat of ISIS or Islamic State. There's a school of thought that ISIS would like nothing more than to draw the U.S. into a land war in the Middle East. Can the U.S. defeat ISIS without committing thousands or tens of thousands of troops?
I think so, but it's going to take a lot of cooperation from nearby countries. It's going to take a lot of cooperation from the Arab world.
Is that realistic to think we can get that kind of cooperation?
Well, I mean, I think it is. We had Qatari jets flying sorties over Libya. You had Jordanian jets and a Jordanian pilot shot down flying sorties against ISIL. So it can be done. And I think we're now at a stage where a lot of these Arab countries are looking around at the nightmare in Libya, the nightmare in Syria, the ISIL group on the loose in Iraq, and they're starting to say this is getting a little out of control, and they're kind of running up against how much disorder they can tolerate. And so I think they are going to be more willing to act, but they're more reluctant, and it takes a lot of leadership from the president to pull them together and to get them willing to do this. You know, good marks to the Jordanians in particular for being so forward on this.
Let's go to Scott.
Aren't there limits, however, to air power, and haven't there been since Billy Mitchell's time? I mean, without American boots on the ground, how are we going to secure some of these cities that we see falling almost daily and prevent some of the atrocities that we've also seen, these mass beheadings and things like this? It just seems that there are limits to what we can do with drones and our air power.
There are, and we also have training, special operations, logistical support, and other things going on in addition to just the air sorties. But I do think it's very important that we be very cautious about not getting into a full-on ground engagement and limiting ourselves to those kind of specialized operations. There is an Iraqi army.
Kind of.
Well, it's being rebuilt after its disasters. They need to take care of their own country. The Kurds are fighting very bravely. The Peshmerga are very active, and they're holding their own. They're actually winning.
Let me hold you there, Senator, so we can go to a question from Maureen.
I'd like to turn to domestic things. The president has proposed a massive infrastructure bill, and it's to be financed by offshore corporate profits. Does that have a bipartisan ring to it at all? And given what we've been through this winter and the sort of third world state of some of our mass transit structures, is there any possibility that people can get together and do something about this really critical problem?
I think there is. There's a lot of bipartisan support for pieces. There's a lot of bipartisan support for getting a highway bill passed. We have to do that by May, and it's coming out of my Environment Public Works Committee. There's a lot of support bipartisan for a gas tax increase because we're all driving more miles, so the tax is going down. There's a lot of support for a repatriation of foreign money and taxing some of that as it comes back to fund infrastructure. But putting the pieces together in a deal that everybody can agree to is still ahead of us.
Governor Gina Raimondo used a State House news conference this week to highlight the underlying weaknesses of Rhode Island's economy. She talked about the loss of 80,000 manufacturing jobs since the 1980s and how one in five Rhode Islanders get their income from public assistance. Senator Whitehouse, you worked for the last Democrat to win election as governor in Rhode Island, Bruce Sundlin, when he inherited the credit union crisis back in 1991. What's your view on why Governor Raimondo is using this tactic of highlighting the problems with Rhode Island's economy ahead of her budget address next month?
Well, I think she wants to show Rhode Islanders who are frustrated by our slow economic growth that she gets it. I think she also wants to make a strong mark with the legislature that this is important and that you guys need to pay attention to this. I like her start. We haven't had a real go-getter as a governor since Bruce Sundlin. And I think she wants to create a sense of energy and a sense of urgency that is consistent with the pace that she, I think, is starting out at. And I hope she keeps it up.
Same question to you, Maureen. Why do you think Governor Raimondo emphasized the problems with Rhode Island's economy before detailing her prescription?
Well, obviously, she's setting stage for the budget. I mean, she's going to have to talk about what's going to get cut, how we're going to spend our money. The other thing she's doing, which is she's using the bully pulpit beautifully. She is in a weak constitutional position, but she has the capacity to line people up and get them together in terms of using her status as governor. And I think she's doing that very well.
For what it's worth, Bruce Sundlin would have never said he was in a weak constitutional position, and I'm not sure that energy on the part of the governor can't overcome that.
In the warm bath of nostalgia, Bruce Sundlin may look good to you who work for him, but the fact is, after 4 years as governor, he got kicked out of office. He lost a primary. I mean, he was so unpopular, could barely get elected to anything. Now, Raimondo, fine, the bully pulpit's great, but look, all of this is just warmed over campaign rhetoric. We all know that. Rhode Islanders have known this for years.
Isn't there a tactical significance to this that, yes, Raimondo has said all this before, but she's obviously got a method to why she's laying it out?
I just think it's a lot of rhetoric without many specifics, and I hope that we see the specifics in the budget. I also think she's wise to tamp down expectations a bit and tell people, yes, this is a long-running problem. We can't solve it overnight.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
My pleasure.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is made possible by the Rhode Island Foundation, Rhode Island's only community foundation.